Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. It's the tight.
Here we go.
It's tricky to rock.
Welcome to Advices Radio, episode number 16. Advices Radio is presented by Naps Gear. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Guys, I am fucking pumped tonight. I've got an interview with Aaron Singerman. He's somebody that I've been following for a long time, and I'm excited to finally hook up with him, bring him on the show, and get to kind of like poke into his life, see what he's been up to, see what he's doing with RodCon 1, as well as relive some past cool moments that I saw in like bodybuilding media history. Plus, we're going to talk about Lamborghinis. How can you not love that? So listen, I said that I was going to bring S2H on this show as well, and I do have an interview with him. I promise that I am going to have S2H on, but I decided what I want to do here is split the show up a little bit. I've got an awesome hour-length interview with Aaron, that was a lot of A's, and then in a couple of days, I'm going to release the S2H interview / Q&A. So guys, just hang with me. Enjoy this interview, and I will be back with that in a couple of days. Furthermore, if you have any questions, go over to advicesradio.com, click on the question box, and you can submit your question there anonymously. I have news. I would call it good news. So after recording with S2H earlier today, he told me he had caught the podcast bug. S2H is back. That's all I'm going to say. He is podcasting again, and he is with me. So expect to hear more of him in the future. And if you have any questions, please send them in. Still working on the t-shirt giveaway, so bear with me. It's coming soon. Next week, I will have something figured out for that. Plus, the Locked Up and Lifted episode with John Romano. So forgive me for being so excited. It's been a good day. Guys, let's get to Aaron fucking Singerman now. Welcome back to Advices Radio. Today I have Aaron Singerman. Aaron Singerman has been around the bodybuilding industry for a long time, and to me this is an exceptionally exciting story because Aaron's somebody that I've personally related to a lot, and I watched him grow from being, you know, just another bro like me or anybody else on the message boards, and he's done something that's been pretty spectacular in bodybuilding. So that's what I'd like to talk to him about today and maybe get a little bit of feedback and guidance, maybe a little bit of information as to what Aaron would share to all of us and how we might be more successful. So Aaron, thanks for being with me, man. This is really cool.
My pleasure, Scott. And thank you for listening all these years. It's amazing when I hear people like yourself who listen to Off Topic with me and Carl and Nora and have kind of seen the whole thing, because you're right. A lot has transpired for me in the last, last 8 or 9 years since we started. Well, yeah, I started with Carl in 2008. So
okay.
It's been a while. It's been 8 years since the show was going, and a lot's happened. So you've literally watched or been part of my life by participating from then to now.
It's exciting, man. And it's cool because, you know, like I said, I had started with Off Topic. I remember the first early episodes. And, you know, for those of you out there that haven't listened to Off Topic, you know, I had Carl on not too long ago. And so I got to ask him all sorts of questions about the show, too. But in case anybody missed that episode, Off Topic was, I believe, like the first live and maybe the only live bodybuilding podcast that was out there.
Yeah, we were Carl had the technology very early on to broadcast it live, and as a result of that and the show being entertaining and different, we got a lot of live listeners that participated, that would go home and get ready for the show every week, and would actually, a community developed around the show where there was, I don't want to say there was tons and tons of people, maybe 2,000-3,000 people that were participating or active in that community. And you know, at one point we were doing around 20,000 downloads, which at the time, you know, when podcasts were relatively new and bodybuilding podcasts, there was only us and Dan Solomon and Bob Ciccarello.
Yeah.
And maybe there's off and on. David started with a Muscle Mob thing with MD.
Yeah.
But it was very rare. It was not as done as it is today. And so we were able to develop a really passionate little community of people that listened and participated in all the shows.
Yeah, I was never a live listener, but I listened every week. Because after the live show, it was turned into a podcast, so anybody could download afterwards. I was one of those people that was downloading afterwards. I think, honestly, I only tuned into like one or two live shows.
Most people are like that.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of live listeners that participated and asked questions and interacted. I mean, people, I remember, you know, people would be texting me during the show, and, you know, PJ Braun, who obviously later was my business partner and at the time just my best friend, would be home listening live, and Louis Yerdell, you know, the Big Sexy later on, would be listening live. And we had this group of people, and I had a group of friends that would listen live and text me during the show. And it was just a very unique thing that I don't think has been done since then.
You know what else was really unique about it was you guys really opened up. Like, I knew what was going on in your lives, and you weren't editing it out. I mean, I remember early on the story of you buying a big screen television that you said at the time, like, you couldn't even afford.
Right.
And then having an issue where, you know, I remember you said that you still had issues with drugs. You had moved from Louisiana, where you were like living with a coke dealer and all this crazy shit had gone down, and you were getting away from that still on methadone. You had an episode where you passed out, you broke your head through the TV. You are telling this story on the radio. Like, how did you have the balls to do that and not edit yourself?
I think that both Carl and I it was like we didn't have a lot to lose, you know what I mean, in our lives. I know Carl was in a bad place with a divorce with his wife and very unhappy marriage before that. And I was, you know, like you said, recovering drug addict, still on the methadone clinic. And that particular day, I would have to go in there. They would give me takeout doses, and I was in the process of trying to wean myself off. But once a month, I'd have to go in there, and they make you take the dose in front of them, because they really don't want you to get off the methadone.
No, they don't.
It's a money making process. So I would take it, and I was very proud that I bought this TV. It was a plasma TV, and at the time they were very, very expensive.
Yeah.
And it was probably a bad thing, a smart decision money wise. Yeah. So I was so proud of it. It was the nicest thing I owned. And I had taken the methadone, and I fell asleep standing up, and I fell backwards into the TV, and I hit the TV and broke it. And I was very depressed.
It's such an embarrassing story to tell too, man. Speaking of which too, I want to tell you, you've done so much, but all the way back to that, congratulations, because I can speak personally to drug addiction, and I know how difficult it can be. I know that for anybody out there who doesn't know, methadone is a nasty, nasty drug.
It's
harder to come off of than heroin. You get the same withdrawal, but you're looking at like a month of that. So once people get on it, and like you're saying, Aaron, these places are money-making built. You know, that's all it is. It's a money-making business. And those doctors are just going to try to push that dose up and up. And once you get so high, you become what they call a lifer.
They did not want me to come off of it. And it ended up taking me, even though I made the decision to stop and to come off the heroin and stop doing drugs, it took me like 8 months to get myself off of it. And they were not willing to help me get off of it, they weren't even like willing to let me try to get off of it. So it was, I ended up having to save up enough take home doses that I just cut myself off basically and never went back. But yeah, it was definitely a a big ordeal. And yeah, we shared everything. You know, I got cheated on by my girlfriend I lived with at the time, Amy.
Yeah.
Talked about her cheating on me on the show. And we the next week, we gave her an opportunity to come on the show and give her side of the story.
I remember that.
I think very rarely in radio history. And I mean, just in general, like big time radio, does something like that happen? So right, yeah, we went all out.
Yeah, you really did. It was a great show. I would love to see it come back. I know that it could never be the same though, no matter what now, you know.
Yeah. We're at such different places in our lives, and to be honest, I'm a much more censored guy in general now because I do have a lot to lose, and I have I am worried about offending people. So,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely different. Carl brought up the fact that he would do it again. I just, you know, I have to be careful with my time and also what I say. So it's definitely different. Maybe one day when I have when I'm doing well enough that I don't care about any of that stuff anymore. When I'm on the whole opposite end of the spectrum where I don't give a fuck, but I don't give a fuck because nothing can, you know, I'll be impervious, then maybe I'll do it then.
Well, actually, I was going to try to bring that up at some other point. I had spoken to him about this, and he had mentioned to me that he would be interested in doing it. So it's just going to be a matter of the right time and the right place. I would love to see the show come back together. I'm sure there's a ton of other people that would. But at the same time, you know, I got to totally respect where you're coming from because you're not the same guy as you were then. And neither is he. You know, he's moved on and he's happy. Here. So it might not be the same. You know, it was definitely a once in a lifetime thing. You know, from there, you had gotten hooked up with Dave and RX. I saw a transition in you somewhere in that point where you went from like this guy who was always really funny and joking around, you know, t-shirt and jeans to the Aaron Singerman that started wearing suits and started having a little bit of direction. And I feel like you had maybe at first stumbled upon something that grew. At a certain point, you took control of that and you decided to start making decisions with it. Could you talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, I don't know if there's an actual moment that I made that decision, but I think that that when I first started working for Dave, basically what had happened was John Romano got fired because of the whole IFBB ordeal, and Dave was basically forced to get rid of John. When John left, he needed somebody to help him do Heavy Muscle Radio. And so he knew about, you know, my extensive background with Off Topic. And at the time, RX Muscle was hosting Off Topic, or one of the places that was hosting Off Topic. And I knew Dave personally. And so he called me up and said, hey, you want to do the show with me? And that's kind of how things got started. And then I started covering shows with Dave and traveling with Dave. And then essentially became like Dave's number two guy.
Yeah.
Where wherever I went, everywhere with Dave, all over the world, Australia, India, I mean, literally everywhere. And I spent a majority of, probably more time with Dave than anybody else. And, yeah. Basically one of the things, you know, I could say negative things about Dave, but instead I'll tell you the positive things is that he is a very, very hard worker, and he demands the people that work with him, especially people that are working closely with him, that they work at the same capacity or level that he does, maybe even more so, because he's paying them. And Dave was paying me a pretty fair amount of money at that time, and so I think he was expecting even more, and so. I guess I went from being a pretty lazy guy that had a lot of potential to somebody who was forced to really forced to go way out of his comfort zone.
Okay.
And Dave had no problem yelling at me and telling me I was stupid or I was doing a bad job or, you know, I'm a moron and stuff like that. And I know that a lot of people being a boss now and having, you know, hundred plus people working for me, I can tell you that does not work with most people. And that if I treated my employees the way that Dave treated me, I would have a lot less employees.
Interesting.
But for whatever reason, it worked with me, and Dave's kind of mentorship really did work for me. And he got me out of my comfort zone, and I pushed a lot harder than I had in the past in school or in life. And I realized I was able to do more than I thought. And then people started looking up to saying to me, you know, that you're doing a good job. And I had other people in the bodybuilding media be like, well, Aaron is the hardest worker. And people start saying, when Aaron covers a show, he does more than everybody else. You know, he puts up the videos faster.
Nice.
And I think I started taking myself a little more seriously. And there was a point where I didn't want to be Aaron Chewbacca Singerman anymore.
I
thought it was that I took myself and my work more seriously than that, and I wanted to be the best at what I did. So I changed from just doing the job or doing as little as I could to wanting to be the best. And I wanted to be better than Dave. I wanted to be better than everybody. I wanted to for people to respect me and for my work to stand on its own. And I think that was a very big shift. I don't know when it happened, but somewhere along the line where I started being like, you know what, I should wear a suit. I take myself seriously. I want to make people realize that bodybuilding is important and it's important to me. And that when I'm at the Arnold or the Olympia, you know, you should dress like you take it seriously. And so I started doing that. And obviously, you know, I couldn't afford to get any kind of like really nice clothes, but I went to Men's Warehouse and two suits for one, and I started racking them up.
Nice.
Different ones for all the shows. And I think when you take yourself seriously and you make sure that you are the best, people start thinking that, and then, you know, good things happen. And so with Dave, I started utilizing my ability to speak and my ability to my belief that RX Muscle and what we were doing was the best.
Yeah.
And I had a really easy time selling advertising for RX Muscle because I believed in what we were doing and I thought we were the best. So I felt like I was helping people by selling them advertising. And so I quickly, Dave would give me 10% commission on the advertising that we sold. And I sold, you know, that year we sold about $1 million in advertising.
Hell yeah.
It wasn't long till Dave was paying me, you know, about $14,000-$15,000 a month.
Damn.
And I think that is, I honestly believe looking back, that that's the reason why me and Dave ended up, it ended up not working out with me and Dave, is because he was paying me more money than he was comfortable with.
Okay. Okay.
You know, people, it's one thing that I can tell you as an employer. I know that it's difficult for a lot of people. Once you're paying somebody that kind of money, and you're not making, like, it's not like Dave was making millions, you know?
Yeah.
It's difficult. It can be difficult mentally to process the fact that you're paying somebody that much money, you know?
Yeah.
It can be.
It kind of reminds me of like when I've gone to a restaurant with my grandma and the bill comes out to $75, she still thinks $2 is enough because that's what you normally tip somebody.
Right.
But the bill was obviously, you know, that's not 20%.
No. Right. Exactly. I think that's an accurate analogy, is that that's how Dave was in his mind still used to getting people to work for free, because that's usually what he did. Most people work for Dave, work for free or work for protein, as the old joke was, they work for Isolize.
Yeah.
So to pay somebody, you know, $150,000, $200,000 a year, just was like super foreign to him. Now, for me, I can tell you my favorite type of employee is the employee that I pay a 10% commission to, because obviously they're cash positive. That's an employee that's making me money.
Yeah.
Like actually making money. And I think that Dave could not get through his head that was the case. I was at RX Muscle and I became the editor-in-chief of the site. And the idea was that Dave was going to step down and focus on other parts of his life, his business, like Species and his coaching and everything. And it kind of just never really happened. I think Dave really liked the limelight, and so did I. And so there was some difficulties in there, but at the same time, you know, that's when I had started, you know, kind of like secretly started Blackstone Labs.
And that's where I was going to go next. So, you know, at this point, Off Topic had kind of phased out and Iron Empire Radio phased in. And now you have to forgive me, too. I'm part of Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, and that's where I've started in podcasting. This is for Advices Radio. But as a bodybuilding nerd, everything I see is filtered through the history of podcasts. What we do is we cover all the podcasts that are out there. We review them every week and we talk to the guys that are on the shows. So, you know, at this stage of the game, we are now in the Iron Empire era.
Right.
And at this time, too, a little product called Super DMZ was going to be taken off the market. Now, I do remember specifically when you guys started promoting this. So would you say that is this where like the match hit the gasoline?
You know, we right before this, I had really diversified my income sources, and I was able to leverage the RX muscle stuff for a lot more. You know, I was working for Paget Medical, which was doing the testosterone therapy, and I was working for Iron Mag Lab, several other Orbit Nutrition. So I was able to, by then I think I had really started figuring stuff out. You know, Paget was paying 4,000 a month. You know, Iron Mag Labs was paying 4,000. I had a few other ones that were five, six. Like it ended up probably, you know, I was doing great. You know, by anybody's standards, you know, me, I was doing fantastic, and I brought PJ along for a lot of that. So PJ was, every time I got a sponsorship, I would always be like, "You got to get PJ Braun, you got PJ." So PJ was doing pretty good as a result, because PJ was a species athlete getting $1,000 a month, and I was able to get him on Iron Mag Labs for $4,000 a month.
Okay.
I also got PJ the job with Paget with the testosterone, so he was doing great too. And we were both working for Iron Mag Labs, him as the main athlete and me as, I guess you would say, like the marketing director.
I remember that.
And
Plus,
yeah, and so
you
we
were
were.
everywhere too. You know, for I remember there being a point in time that listening to podcasts, I could not help but hear your voice, no matter what show I put on, it seemed. I'm proud to say that at this point, I'm trying to catch up with you there. I'm on about three different shows myself, and
Good.
I've got my hands in about seven of them. So
That's good. That's good.
I'm trying
I
to
mean
follow in
that.
your footsteps, Aaron.
I'm telling you, the truth of the matter is making people aware of you, and the good stuff about you is, I mean, and building your reputation is really, honestly, a big part. And you know, we're talking, if we, you know, later we're going to talk about tips and stuff. That is definitely a big part of this. Is I was able to build relationships and build my reputation over this period of time. And even though I didn't actually, you know, I didn't actually really utilize a lot of that 100% till I owned my own business. All of that stuff was building up for the time that I could. So I may not even realize what I was doing. It wasn't necessarily intentional, but when I would go to bodybuilding shows and make sure to shake everybody's hand and say hi to everybody and meet every judge and meet every sponsor, and all that ended up benefiting me. And I did
Sure.
it in a way where people liked me and respected me, and I never did anybody wrong. So you know, that all helps. So build your reputation and build the awareness of who you are, definitely is a big thing for success in business.
Okay. So at this point then, you said you diversified, you had, it sounds like you had multiple streams of income, and then we were
Many.
working towards what eventually became Blackstone Labs. At this point was the Iron Mag Super DMZ.
Right. So Robert DiMaggio had hit me up and basically said that this product, what he was scared, product was going to be becoming legal, and that he was going to dispose of the units. And at the time, I wasn't married, I had no kids, and I say that because it was a good time to take a risk for me. And I said to him, "Let me have those units, and I will sell them. I'll give you all your money back for what you paid for them, and then we'll split the profits."
Nice.
And I enlisted PJ Braun in the project, and I figured between me and him and all of our resources, we could get rid of these 5,000 units, and we did. We got rid of the 5,000 units in 6 weeks, five or six
Nice.
weeks,
Nice.
and we made $75,000 each in that little more than a month. And basically, at that point, me and PJ, you know, looked at each other and said, "Uh-oh, like this is we're never going to make money like this again. You know, this is over." We came up with the idea to, or I really, I came up with the idea to approach Robert and say, "Hey, can we keep this going? Like, it's not illegal. Can we buy more? And can we, you know, work something out where, you know, you don't have to do anything anymore. You're just like a almost like a silent investor, and you'll own the same amount of company as me and the same amount as PJ." So it was evenly split. And he went for it. And so that we ended up taking the Super DMZ and changing the label from saying Iron Mag Labs to putting the label Blackstone Labs to I guess alleviate some of his liability. So we created this business, Blackstone Labs, and we were at my kitchen table, and I was signing us into Sundiz to create a business entity. And literally, I was like, came up with two strong words. I was like, "What do you think about Blackstone?" And Darielle, my wife, and Peter were like, "Yeah, it was good." And so we typed it in, not knowing that that would later become, arguably the fastest growing, most exciting supplement company in the world, and the 27th fastest growing privately owned company in the country.
God, wow.
So that's how it all began. And one product became two, became three, became four, became 30. So yeah. That is honestly how it all kind of got going, all based on that. And about a year and a half later, Robert DiMaggio, not the most stable of individuals, seemed to really dislike me and PJ. I can't even tell you really why, but he really seemed to dislike Blackstone Labs, even though he was making an absolutely tremendous amount of money. I knew that he was very unhappy with us, so I approached him about buying him out and lowballed him, and he basically doubled what I told him, and that was still a great deal for me and PJ. And okay. We basically liquidated everything we had and ended up buying his shares for $650,000. And the rest is history, very, very fortunate that we were able to get him out at that cost.
Wow. So this is the point here, somewhere in this portion of the story is where you start to lose me, because I've been able to follow everything you've said up to this point, and I've been able to put a check mark next to it and say, okay, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. Now here's where the gap is. So this is what I'm most interested in. And, I do want to talk about Redcon and where you're at today. But this is the area where I feel like I personally could use some lessons. And I'm sure that everybody else would be excited to understand a little bit more of how you think somebody could help benefit themselves if they want to make the most, out of this passion and this hobby, whatever you want to call bodybuilding. What are the steps somebody could take? Because, I've always looked at things as, okay, here's my goal, we'll call that C, and here's me, I'm A. So, there's B plus, all these other mini steps in between that. And those are the steps that I'm trying to figure out now. And I think those are the steps that a lot of other people are, scratching their heads about.
Sure. Well, I mean, that missing B is, that's a huge, huge factor. There's a lot that needs to be done, a lot that needs to be figured out, and it's not an easy process. And that's obviously why there are not a lot of people that make that step from A to C, to get that B. And I think that the way that I did it was essentially I kept my eyes open for opportunity, and I put my head down and grind, worked my ass off, tried to be the best at what I was doing, but I kept my eyes open at the same time for opportunity. And I think that if you're the best at anything that you do, opportunity is going to present itself to you. You just have to know when to do it and not be afraid of failure. And, me and PJ, when we did all this stuff, I never even considered that it wouldn't work. So I don't even think that now. I have multiple, a whole slew of businesses, lots that aren't even public. And when I do them, when I start something new, like I'm starting a new project with CT Fletcher. So there's a new line called the Iron Addicts brand.
Nice.
That comes out in November. And so me and him are partners on the line. I don't think like maybe it won't work out. Like, is this a good idea to put a bunch of my money into this? I don't even think that way. I know that it's going to work out. I know it, I know that I need to take the next breath. There's no chance it won't work out. And because I live my life like that, I feel like, that ability to take risk and to believe in yourself when an opportunity does arise is a really big factor that, even though it sounds simple and, I feel like most people don't feel that way. They look at the risk and they analyze it and they take too long, and before they know it, it doesn't sound so good. And even a lot of successful people that I know are like, damn, how do you keep getting stuff done like this? And it's literally because I know that I will make it work.
Okay.
Whatever it is. So, to give suggestions, specific, I would need to know specific answer questions, but I feel like you have to know kind of like what your, obviously number one is what your passion is, and then don't get pigeonholed into thinking you need to be a Dallas McCarver, and make money competing.
Yeah.
Or you don't need to think I'm going to need to make money in the supplement business. There's all kinds of various ways to make money in anything that you're passionate about. And, and that's the, look at like, how, I was doing the HRT stuff. there's great money in some of these rejuvenation clinics and stuff. And even though it's not directly bodybuilding, it is surrounding bodybuilding. And that's where there's lots of money.
Sure.
Did I answer it, Scott?
I think so. I think so. As best as you could. I mean, I think it was a huge, vague question, you know, that I didn't expect to have a bow around it. But I think we dug into it a little bit. And I think that if we keep pushing a little bit further here as I go along, we might get to a little bit more. So, sure. you know, at this point, you're running RadCon 1, and that's the new project. That's where everything I'm seeing on Facebook is pointing. This is the up and coming thing. Can you compare that to Blackstone and Prime? What's the overhead like for this business?
Well, when I started, I'm in a unique position now. So when I started out Blackstone, obviously we had really no money and no resources. It was just me and PJ. You know, I was traveling for most of the very beginning, and PJ was actually physically packing the packages.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, I have a huge, huge advantage, compared to then, because I was able to open an office, I have 12 full-time marketing people. You know, okay. I have a very smart second in command that I was able to get. You know, obviously, I have Eduardo that I know, most people know, that's with me all the time, 24/7 practically, helping. And I have a huge support team, including my wife. And I'm starting, you know, at a much, much better place. The overhead is pretty significant. You know, I'm not, didn't start the supplement company on a loan from, you know, from Robert DiMaggio of product, you know. So
right.
I definitely started in a much different place where I have the ability to spend some money to get things going. It's very, I'm very fortunate because I know what it takes to be successful in this business. And I have basically all the tricks of the trade, basically, you know, not, I don't want to say figured out, but a pretty good bit of them. And then I made a lot of mistakes, you know, even though Blackstone is incredibly successful, there was a lot of mistakes made. And to this day, there's still mistakes being made in all the businesses that I've been a part of and that I'm currently a part of. And I'm able to really take a look, take a step back, look at those mistakes and not make them this time. So
what are some of the things, for instance, that you know, as the viewing audience, we may have seen, say, with Blackstone that you would have done differently?
I think that I think mostly it's misspending money, you know, spending money on stuff that doesn't necessarily benefit the brand.
Okay.
You know, spending money on stuff that may appeal to me personally or PJ, that doesn't really have anything to do with building the company.
So does that have to do with, do Lamborghinis fit or do not fit into that?
Lamborghinis, absolutely. No, I think Lamborghinis absolutely fit.
Yes.
Lamborghinis, I love nice cars. I love nice things. And I think that I personally, Ferraris, so Ferraris fit, not necessarily Lamborghinis.
Okay,
but,
okay.
No, I think that's what you do with your personal money. And, I think that, you only live life once. And if that's something that you want, or that's important to you, then you should absolutely do it if you can afford it and be responsible about it. I'm talking more about like, spending money on athletes that don't matter, marketing stuff that doesn't matter. What you do with your personal money is a different story. There's just a lot of things that we could have done differently where some of the money, like we spent, I mean, with Blackstone, we spent tons of money on print ads that I'm not sure, you know, that I wouldn't do again. See, you can't really say that any of the stuff didn't work because the company is very successful. I just know that the way that some of the money was spent and some of the decisions I made with the money, how it was spent, I would do differently now, knowing the things that I know. But there's, to be honest, Scott, there's a ton, absolute ton of little things that I think added up, that can add up. The way that we handled some of the digital marketing, the way that we handled the pricing and sales, the way that we did marketing in general, the way that we handled brick and mortar, some of the decisions that were made with distribution. So there's a long, long list, honestly, of what we could have done differently. And, you know, both PJ and I became a little bit more disconnected from some of the very hands-on stuff that goes along with the sales portion of the business. I'm very, very good at selling product,
Yeah.
and I'm good with relationships. And because there's so much stuff going on with so many businesses, that I got pulled away a little bit from actually speaking to retailers at all. So and like PJ, I don't think has ever spoken to a retailer. So it's like those type of things could be fixed and could be done a little better. And that's one of the things that I'm doing.
Okay, cool. Going back to nice stuff, cool things. You
Sure.
said once, and maybe it was a year ago on one of the podcasts I was listening to, you said that every day that you sit in your car and you turn it on, you think to yourself how grateful you are that you could be able to have the means to buy this car and to enjoy it, and there's not a day that
Yeah.
you ever have regretted buying it. You know what, man? I totally connected to that. The last year, I was able to buy a car that I really liked, and I was able to do that through the money I had made as a coach. And this was like not any money I
Awesome.
had made like through my old blue collar job, which I've thankfully been able to quit now. But it was money that I made through my own means and my own hard work. To me, that is such a motivating factor to continue pushing forward. Can you talk about that motivation, the motivation to be able to have the things you want in life and how
Sure,
that
sure.
plays into, your business moves?
Sure. Well, I think everybody's got to be finding their own motivation for what they do. And, I know for me personally, whether people think it's stupid, they agree with it or not, everybody has a right to decide what they want to do
Yeah.
with their money, and they have the right to decide what's important to them. And I respect that, some people may love, stamp collecting. I think stamp collecting is stupid. I don't get it, why you want that. But on the flip side, or like shoes, there's a lot of people now that love the Jordans.
Oh,
I know people have hundreds of pairs, hundreds of thousands of dollars in Jordans, and they don't even wear them. So I don't
yeah.
understand that. But you know what? More power to them. If they worked hard for that money, and you already know, we already discussed it. I didn't come for money. My parents don't have money. Matter of fact, I pay for every bill my parents have. I completely support them. Neither of
That's
them
awesome
work.
you
My
could do
dad's
that,
very
man.
sick. Yeah. So I mean, I did not come from means. Nobody gave me anything. And in business, I would say, I would actually say that people were rooting against me versus trying to help me. What I did not have a lot of people like, hey, let me help you out here. Let me give you this leg up on the competition. So
Really?
all the things that I've earned, like you said, like the car and stuff, cars in general, house, all this thing, it is a reminder. And if I and when I look at it and when I think about it, I am proud of what I've been able to accomplish, and it makes me reminds me, it's a visceral reminder. Getting
Yes.
into a Ferrari is a visceral reminder that yeah, I'm doing something right. I'm going to go into work today. I'm going to kick ass, and I'm being rewarded for this hard work. This is a reminder of being rewarded. So, I understand that a lot of people don't think that stuff is important, and I get that,
Sure.
but I worked my ass off for those things, and to give my kids the best education, to go on vacations, to all the night, all those nice things are important to me, and I like them,
Yeah.
and that's why I do them. So yeah, what you said, I posted once because I never had nice cars growing up. I had a Honda. When I met Darielle, I was driving a 1996 Ford Explorer.
Okay.
That beats the shit. Before that, I had a 1990 Lexus ES300 that I had to put oil in every day, so because it leaked the oil and it shot and it had smoke come out of it. So I was not a, literally. This is getting the car that I want, or getting a, as I gotten nicer cars, I get in them, and yeah, they're expensive, and yeah, I pay a lot per month for the car. But I never, not one time have ever regretted it and said this is something that I shouldn't have done or whatever, because I get so much enjoyment out of them. So that's how I feel about all that stuff. And I know that when, and I actually don't post a lot of stuff, Scott. You'll see now. I intentionally don't post those things as much or very little now, because I know that people don't get it, and it rubs people the wrong way. And so, like, if I post a picture of a Rolls Royce, no matter what I say, there's going to be a large portion of people that say, fuck him, fuck that guy, which is one of the things that's wrong with America and the world. Instead of, like, when I look at somebody, when I moved to Boca, I was driving an Acura, very nice car, my nicest car I ever had. We were living in a $2,500 a month house, 1,500 square foot, nicest house I ever lived in. But the people that were around me had the Ferraris and Rolls Royce and nice houses and, you know, $10,000 watches and all that stuff. And you know what I said when I met these people and saw them driving? I said to myself, damn, what is he doing that I'm not doing? How do I get that?
Yeah.
I looked at them, and when I spoke to him and met them, I was thrilled to meet them so that I could pick their brain and see what's so special about this guy. He has a Bugatti.
Yeah, yeah.
What is he doing that I could be doing? What's his habits that he's doing that got this Bugatti? And even the ones who said that their daddy gave it to him, their mommy gave it to him, I said, hell yeah, good for you. Because if you look at that guy and say, fuck that guy, fuck him, that's the energy you're putting out. I guarantee you, you're not going to be successful.
That makes total sense. You know, you use a very interesting word there, habits. What are the habits that you've noticed? What are some habits you've tried to work into your own life to be more successful?
So that's one of the things that is the reason for me doing the current podcast, Readiness Radio, that I do with Matt Meinrad as much as we can. And I call it the Readiness Radio. It's the science of success, because I think that there is a science to success in life. And I think that those habits, that the habits are really honestly the thing that needs to be built, just like going to the gym, just like eating, you know, a certain kind of diet. Those habits can be formed. And when they're formed and adhered to, there is you are guaranteed some level of success. I'm not saying everybody's going to be a millionaire or whatever, but I guarantee you, if you do the right things and you build those correct habits,
yeah,
you will be successful. And I have noticed, because I have some friends. I have a friend that's a legit billionaire. You know, he owns the fourth biggest advertising firm in the entire world. And wow. He's somebody that I hang out with. He wrote a great book called Leading Fearlessly. A really, really cool guy who built it from nothing. And this guy, he basically has the same habits that the guys that I meet that are championship athletes, that are, you know, successful business people that are really, really good at anything. They all kind of have similar habits. And that's kind of the thing that I picked up on, because when I read a lot of books, business books, inspirational stuff about like how to be, you know, championship mindset stuff, you know, how to be good in business, how to be good, you know, even stuff like how to be a good father and a good family man. A lot of those things, those books say the same thing over and over and over again. All the books say the same thing.
Okay.
So some of the habits that I think that you need to build, are, number one is work harder than anybody else. Hmm. So even if you are, and I tell this to people, even if you are a waiter at the restaurant, you need to be the best motherfucking waiter there. So that means you're going to fold the napkins better. You're going to take pride in every little piece of that. And I guarantee you that will pay off. So you're the best waiter. It doesn't matter. No, this doesn't matter how I bring the food, how I trip. Everything matters. And if you do every piece of that, then you're going to get asked to be the manager.
Okay.
You know, and you're going to be, and you do the managing job and you manage better than anybody else, you'll get asked to be the regional manager and so on and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that energy of trying to be the best, no matter what you do, is permeates everything else. And it gets noticed. Even if by people, say I go to a restaurant and I meet some guy who's a fucking amazing waiter, I may say to him, hey, man, you want to come work for me? That's what happened, you know, with Eduardo, basically, who's now with me all the time. You know, basically, I saw him working hard and he worked the booth for Blackstone for free.
Okay.
I was like, this fucking kid's got it, right?
Yeah.
And it got him the opportunity to work for me. And now he's with me all the time. And he gets paid, I think, several times more than he was getting paid at his best.
Okay.
And, you know, he has a new Mercedes AMG. And I mean, and I guarantee you the kid stays on the path he's right now and he'll be rich.
Nice.
By staying around me, doing the things he's doing now, one day, there'll be other opportunities that come of it, whether it's with me or with something else. This will pay off for him. And it's literally from being the best and kicking ass at something that was not necessarily related.
Yeah.
Another thing is laziness. That's one of the things I talk about a lot, is that, and it kind of ties in with the first one, is that people, and me included, are naturally lazy. Everybody wants to do the least possible to get by. I mean, it even comes back to like the hunter-gatherer thing, right? You don't hunt when you're not hungry.
Right.
That is a problem. And it's something that people, everybody, whether it's somebody who's very lazy, like I was, or somebody that's in between, but most everybody, unless they're made an effort not to be, are just naturally to some degree or another lazy. And you have to get out of that habit. You have to break through of that habit. It's like when you go into the gym, I used to always do the hardest exercise first to get it out of the way. That was like the common sense thing, right?
Right.
Arnold would say, you get into the gym, you squat first.
Right.
If you're doing legs. If you're doing chest, you bench first. If you're doing back, you deadlift first. Or, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
And I kind of take that, even though now we know that's not necessarily true in the
gym. We can do a lot of pre-exhausting and everything else. Sure. But I follow you, though. I'm following you.
But I live my life like that. So I make sure that I get rid of, I do the stuff, the hardest stuff first. I don't delay. I don't put stuff off.
Nice.
And that is a habit that it took a long time and was very difficult for me to do because I am naturally very lazy. So if I have to make a difficult phone call that I don't want to do, I always want to put it off. I'll be like, I'll do it later, you know. But now I when I notice that that's what I want to do, I'll fucking stop everything to do it.
Nice.
And my wife will tell you that it's not necessarily a good thing for a relationship or, you know, but I will stop everything. You know, to make sure, and even if I can't stop everything, I will stop everything to make a note or set an alarm. Because if I don't, it becomes the sliding thing of where everything can wait.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything is not that important. Before you know it, you know, all the things you should be doing are being pushed off to the next day, the next week, and then you just don't do them.
How about balance? Because, you know, you mentioned your wife, you've got a wife, you've got family. And, sure. You know, when you first started everything, you didn't have all those other people in your life that depended on you. How do you find balance? Because I know myself, man, listen, I'm trying to do exactly what you're saying. I'm trying to be the best I can. I'm trying to work the hardest I can. And it takes a lot of time, you know, not just energy, sure. But the hours of the day, man, they get directed to this. How do you manage to still have, you know, a life, a family, and still have fun?
First of all, fun. My business is fun. So I like what I do to the degree, to the level that if I didn't have a family, didn't have a wife or whatever, I would only do the business. So
sure. I can relate to that. I can relate to that.
Honestly, that's what's fun. So what is my thing I enjoy the most, you know, other than obviously my kids, my wife and family time is work. So like, I look forward to Monday. I'm excited to go to the office. I really don't want to leave. I want to stay there. I want to work. I want to get shit done. I want to get to the next level and the next goal. And that's what's the most fun for me. And that's what's the most important. Even though now I'm in a weird spot where the money doesn't necessarily excite me like it used to.
Okay.
So when I used to make, I mean, me and PJ would run around and jump and hug and it would be a celebration when we make a $25,000 sale.
Something.
And now it's like, oh, cool. You know? And, and me and PJ, last time we jumped around and hugged, we did $1 million sale.
Damn.
And so a $25,000 sale, even though now it's a new company with Redcon, I'm like, I'm a little bit like that excitement for stuff like that is kind of gone. The big excitement. So now it's a grind. And so I'm constantly pushing to meet the next goal and to beat the last month and everything. But so the answer to your question is, I feel like anybody who reaches an extreme level of success cannot have too much balance, honestly. Mm. It kind of sucks, but you won't see. I mean, if you read, I'm a really big reader, and one of the things I do like to read is success stories.
Okay.
And if you read big success stories, I'm talking about people that are, you know, iconic, like a Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, if we're talking tech. I mean, there's a long list of very successful guys that and girls that you will read about, and they had either very little or no balance. And I think that there's a level of obsession that is required to be very successful. And that's one of the reasons I think that bodybuilders, believe it or not, even though most of them are lazy and many of them don't accomplish much with their life, they have the potential to be great at business and making money, because there's a level of obsession that's required to be a bodybuilder.
Absolutely.
So to get on stage, to diet, to compete, to take the things you need to take, you have to be willing to do more, go further, and be a little crazy. And I think those same characteristics can be taken into the business world and really, really kick some ass. I don't know if it it doesn't happen a lot, but it could.
Yeah.
I think that if people, if bodybuilders, maybe knew that they had inside of them what it takes to be very successful, maybe it would happen more often. Because I think that, you know, I tell Dallas all the time, Dallas McCarver, who's our main Redcon athlete, you know, that by him hanging around me and seeing this stuff, it's going to benefit him tremendously, because I think that Dallas has all of the factors, including the intelligence, to be the next, you know, Jay Cutler of bodybuilding. Not just, and I don't mean just as Mr. Olympia, I mean as a successful business person who's able to become wealthy in the sport.
Okay.
The answer to the question is that it is very difficult to have balance. And the way that I do it is I set aside Sunday as family day to limit the amount of business and to spend the day with my kids and my wife. And even though that's only one day out of seven, I pretty much totally dedicate that day. I don't go to the office. Like I said, I limit my business calls. I limit the emails. I don't totally cut it off, but I do a pretty good job of it. And then I try to leave for work after the kids get up and get dressed and everything, so I'm able to spend time in the morning with them.
Okay.
And then I make sure to get home before they are asleep almost every night, so I'm able to put Asher to bed and see Aiden before he goes to bed every night. So that's more than a lot of dads can do.
Sure.
So I think that's important. Also, the kids get to travel with me a lot. They're able. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
My parents either weren't able to afford it or didn't have. I mean, it's stressful to travel with two kids.
Sure.
So we have the ability to have. I have a full time nanny who travels with us.
Okay.
The kids are able to have a different room. So because of the work, we're able to afford stuff that most people either wouldn't do or can't do. So I'm able to, you know, I guess kind of like leverage the work and the success to spend more time with them, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. And you said you're at the hotel. Are you traveling right now?
Yeah. I have both kids with me and Darielle, and we're visiting my dad in Houston. My dad's very sick. So I came last week and then we went to the Olympia and now we're all back here again.
Nice. And, you know, I appreciate you coming on. For everybody listening, Aaron is taking his Saturday morning to talk to me here. So this is really awesome, man.
Aiden is asleep in the other room. So this is ended up being perfect timing.
Nice. You know, the first lesson I think I remember you, maybe, I don't know if it was the first lesson you figured out, but the first lesson you shared with us goes all the way back to, I remember you were buying a computer. And you just talked about this on Readiness Radio, too, on the, I believe it was the latest episode. You said you wanted to buy this new Mac computer. Yeah. And I think it was at the time, your girlfriend, not your wife yet. She said, you should have, if you're going to buy that computer, you should have at least twice as much money in the bank.
Right.
You know, before you buy that. And that kind of, I like that perspective a lot. And I think that for me, spending is important. You know, it is nice to be able to enjoy, you know, the work that we put in and get that reward. I can totally relate to exactly what you're saying. So I'm not on the level of Ferraris yet, but I'm working on it, man. And I will keep you posted, because I'm definitely trying to follow in your footsteps. You've done some really amazing stuff, Aaron. It's really cool to see. I'm super proud to see that.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that. It's all surreal for me. You know, when I give people a tour of the new house, because, you know, people want to walk them around and show them the house and stuff. And it's always a reminder, like, by showing it to people, it's kind of like surreal, because part of it, like when you step away and talk about it, or when you're not there in the moment, it seems like surreal, you know, like it's not really, it's because it happened quick in the scheme of things. It happened very fast. So
sure.
And when you're in the moment, you know, time flies, you know, one day turns into a week, a month, and a year. So before you know it, you know, time has passed, and sometimes it's tough to stop and kind of smell the roses.
Yeah. Yeah. So, man, I look forward to seeing what you have on the horizon here. Is there anything you'd like to tell us about that's coming up with Redcon?
I got Asher in the room. You want to say hi, Ash?
Hi.
Hey, Asher. How you doing, buddy?
Who are you?
I'm Scott.
Scott?
Yeah, nice to meet you, buddy.
Okay, go see mommy, buddy. We're doing a radio show. Okay. That's real life, Scott.
Nice.
Redcon right now is in a really cool place. You know, this is the first full month. This month is the first full month of Redcon One. The website is up, and can you take him out of here? I'm sorry. So this is the first full month of the site being up and all the products being in house.
Okay.
And us selling to retailers, and we had such a great. I mean, really, you know, I expected big things, but it's been actually, it has exceeded my expectations. We're in
nice.
Over 100 brick and mortar retail locations already, and the products have been delivered to almost all of them now. 3 weeks ago, the products arrived.
Okay.
So just to give you an idea, we were doing some pre-sale stuff, but 3 weeks ago, the products arrived. We're already in 100 brick and mortar retailers. We have 4 countries that have ordered for distribution, and, you know, we will do in this month more than Blackstone did in its first year of business.
Wow.
So it's wild. And that's what I mean. Like all those relationships that I told you in the beginning that you're building up now, those relationships that I built up during the time with Blackstone, I was able to call those people up and say, hey man, I got a new thing. The products are awesome. The actual formulas are better than anything else in the market. They taste great. The branding and the packaging looks awesome. I promise you it's going to work. Please, you know, help me out. And honestly, just about everybody did.
Nice.
It's been really, really cool. And, you know, we have 13 products. We started the line with a pretty full line. And I have some great athletes on board. The first person I called after I picked the name and the logo and everything was Dallas McCarver, because he is somebody that I thought was a really nice guy and a good person, B, tremendously underused at BSN, the company he was with at the time, and C, I always thought of Dallas as like the young, Ronnie Coleman, a young white Ronnie Coleman, basically.
Nice.
You know, because he's basically super strong.
Yeah.
He's a very large dude. I mean, he competed at 287 pounds at the Olympia this year.
Yeah, yeah.
At 25 years old. He's tall, 6'1" and a half, and he has made tremendous progress in the last few years, and there's no sign of stopping. So he has all of those factors, plus he can talk and he's likable and respectful. People like him. And so I thought to myself, like, this is perfect, because I found that as bodybuilders get older, and this isn't always the case, but bodybuilders get older and achieve more success, and they get more stuck in their ways.
Okay.
So like Cody Montgomery, Cody was fantastic because Cody was very malleable. He didn't already think he knew everything.
Okay.
And I feel like bodybuilders, because they're around a lot of people that are telling them they're awesome, you're great, you know, you're the best, because of their physique, then a lot of times they're not as, you know, open to suggestion on business stuff and social media stuff. You know what I mean?
I could see that.
Whereas Dallas respects what I've done and wants to be part of the team. And basically whatever I think will work best for us as a team, he's willing to do, which is, I mean, you can't possibly even quantify what that could be worth. And, also we have his coach, Matt Jansen, and Matt's wife, Jordan, two phenomenal people that have helped out tremendously. And they're a big part of his success. Matt's a very knowledgeable guy. I know you know Matt.
Absolutely.
People like and respect Matt. And we built this big team. You know, we got Jordan Peters, who I know you know.
Oh, I didn't realize you had Jordan with you.
Yeah, Jordan's on the team.
Awesome. And,
also a really great guy, very knowledgeable. His girlfriend, or I don't know if they're married. His girlfriend's also on the team, who's very smart.
Yeah, she's great. She's got a great physique, too.
Great physique. Tremendously strong girl.
Absolutely. I want to try to get her on PED. I have to ask Jordan about that. I think she'd be a great guest on the show.
Yeah, well, she is. I mean, she is just very impressive. Not just impressive physically, impressive mentally, and very intelligent.
Yes, absolutely.
Has her master's degree, going for a PhD. Very, very smart girl. So we built this big team. I have a long list of people. I won't list every single person. We have a long list of people that we got together to create this really awesome team. And that's kind of how I'm doing this. I'm viewing this project as like a team versus kind of like what I've done in the past. This is actually a team. And I got that kind of idea from the Navy SEALs. We have two Navy SEALs Ryan Bates and Brandon Cruz,
okay,
who were former very highly decorated Navy SEALs that have, you know, multiple confirmed kills, multiple tours of combat duty.
Wow.
And they both are amazing people. Ryan Bates is a amazing athlete. He is the fastest time of the O course at Bud's, which is like their obstacle course.
Okay.
Bud's SEAL training. He holds the record for the fastest time. I can't say who he protects, but he does senior protection duty for a very big celebrity.
Interesting.
And then he owns two bars, and he flips houses. He's a very successful businessman.
Wow.
Amazing athlete, black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
He's got a lot going on.
Yeah. I mean, just 17 confirmed kills. I mean, he's like the real deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these guys are just tremendous. Brandon is tremendous. Brandon's a father. They're both great guys. And the main thing that they talked to me about was the camaraderie and the kind of like depending on your brother and the brothership and the community that the SEALs have, and how they'll do anything for each other. I really like that idea. I read some of the books from one of his close friends, Jocko.
Okay.
He's a guy who does a podcast, who is both of those guys are friends with him. And he was the SEAL team leader for, what was it called? Bruiser, Team Bruiser, which is the main team that did the most, that honestly, unfortunately, lost the most guys in Afghanistan, but also had the most confirmed kills, saw the most action. And he was the commander for that unit.
Okay.
He also led Marcus Luttrell, which is, you know, the famous lone survivor. And so these guys all know each other. And I really like that idea of building a team versus building a company. So everybody that's in the office are all, I look at them as team members.
And, interesting.
It's interesting. It is interesting. You know, one of the things that I like that I'll share with you that I think is good for business is team members critiquing other team members. So that way they're relying on you and you're liable to them. Hmm. So everybody has the opportunity to critique. So what the SEALs do is during periods of training, maybe you do it, let's say every month, you'll have a blind review nobody knows who the person is that's writing it down, but they review each team member, the strengths, the weaknesses.
Okay.
And then the team leader sees the reviews at the end and doesn't know who is reviewing who, but sees these blind reviews of the team members. And you can take those and take the weaknesses and call out the weaknesses of the people. And a lot of times people don't really realize what their weaknesses are because you have this version of yourself, which is not necessarily. And also as a leader, sure, I may have a version of myself that I think I'm a certain way, but if 12 other people perceive me some way other than I think of myself, maybe I need to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes total sense.
So that's kind of how we, also, you know, to kind of the edge of the sword here also is that obviously if everybody thinks, you know, this guy is weak and bad and not a team player, then you know to get rid of him.
That makes sense too.
Because you don't want, you know, you cut the weakest link basically.
Sure, sure. If they can't be improved, you know, it sounds right. it sounds like a real positive thing though. In the most part, it sounds like it would be a great experience and that everybody could kind of learn how to better themselves. I mean, I always welcome positive criticism. And when I say positive, I mean constructive, you know, something that's going to help me be better.
100%. Usually like in the SEALs, the officer doesn't get a critique, but I'm absolutely, you know, on the list and available to be critiqued by my guys, because it definitely can make you a better, stronger leader. Obviously in the military, they don't want to, you know,
right,
leader, right? You're not going to, just because they don't like the officer doesn't mean he's going to not be the officer. But
right,
for me, I want to be a stronger leader, and it is important that the guys like me, at least that they respect me, you know?
Sure, sure. Yeah, and yeah, you want to be able to relate to them. You want them to be happy, you know? And
sure.
And I think that would probably, I'm going to guess, you know, make for a more successful team.
No, I can tell you that in the past, my employees would leave at 5 or 4:30 sometimes. They would come in, you know, right there, come in at 9, right on the dot. You know, most people don't really like to be called on the weekend, you know, some of the people don't even answer their phone when I would call them,
yeah.
You know, and it's totally not that way at RedCon. I mean, quite often people are there till 8 o'clock at night. The marketing department, you know, I let them when at like five, they'll turn on the music and it's like dance party in there.
So they
bring in, a lot of them will bring in drinks and stay there and order food in and do like dinner.
Nice.
You know, it's definitely a different atmosphere. And I think a lot of it relates to building a team versus building a business that has like a distinct hierarchy and like rules and regulations. Although we do have all that stuff.
Sure.
It just feels different.
Nice. So would Matt Meinrad answer the phone on the weekend if you were to call him?
You know what? It's funny. He would now. He used to not. Matt Meinrad has been, has transformed. He took, he has a very different outlook on life. And I think that, the Matt Meinrad that people knew a few years ago is a different one now. And, I think it's really helped him to, just like me being around Dave Palumbo, I think has helped Matt a lot being around me, although I'm nowhere near I don't talk to Matt in that fashion, but Matt definitely is a lot better. I don't want to say better person, but definitely better worker and more of a much harder worker. Matt will tell you that that he was lazy, but I won't allow that. So it doesn't work around me.
And I don't think he wants that today. It's just what I see. And of course I'm basing this off of, interactions off the internet, and everything else. And then the stuff that I see through his podcasting. But yeah, I feel like Matt wouldn't want to be a lazy person today. I feel like, and you know what too, I'm going to tell you one thing about Matt that I think a lot of people didn't give him as much credit as he deserved in the past because he had always kind of taken a laid back joking attitude. But he did an awful lot, though, by just building Project Bodybuilding. I mean, that site is freaking amazing. It's been great. And he just kind of like had in the past this like kind of like laid back, carefree attitude about it. And he was always joking around. But he deserves a lot of credit for having put that whole thing together. And
absolutely. Absolutely. He definitely has always, like me, has a lot of potential and has the ability, has always had the ability. I saw the ability in him very early on, and that's why I hired him for RX Muscle and hired him over and over again, basically, and always supported Matt, because I know that Matt had the ability to be really good at whatever he wants to do. And now it's actually happening, and Matt is, by working with me and for me, Matt is going to be make a lot of money. And I think that he could tell you that now, feel very confident in that right now. And that's really awesome, man. I mean, I tell Matt, I can't wait till he buys his Ferrari or whatever he wants to buy a S550, the big body Mercedes. That's his next thing. And
nice.
I can tell you for sure that that will make me just as happy, maybe even happier than Matt buying it for himself. Cause there's nothing I get a bigger kick out of than something like that.
Yeah. Well, you see the success you've had in your own life and how that's made you feel. And that would be awesome. And that would be so cool too, to, from your position, to actually know that you were a part of being able to help somebody else do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. It's funny because the car thing, coming back to the car thing, but our number one sales guy, James at Blackstone, he bought a Lamborghini. And when he bought his Lamborghini, I mean, I honestly couldn't have been any happier and more excited. And that's what I did post.
I think I saw that one.
Yeah, I was very, very excited. And Chris Vanfleesta got an Acura R8. We have a lot of guys with nice cars. And man, that's like the coolest thing ever. I mean, that they're able to kick ass, and that we are able to work together to afford them to get something like that.
Well, is there anything else that I'm missing here, Aaron? Anything that I'm not touching on when I talk to you that I should be mentioning? I should be asking?
No. I think you're covering all of it. We didn't talk about all the different business stuff, but. That's not really important. You touched on the main ones. Obviously, I work with a lot of other people, and because of the reputation for success that I've built, that I've had the opportunity that people reach out to me a lot to work together with me on other businesses. And that's important, not necessarily for me, but for your listeners out there, because by being successful and having a reputation of doing the right thing by people, it will absolutely get you more opportunities. I mean, I'm overwhelmed with opportunities, so it's like, that is, and then you have to know, the next thing is, when you get to that level, hopefully your listeners all get there, is you need to know when to say no, because the biggest mistake an entrepreneur can make once they reach a level of success is say yes too much.
Huh. Interesting.
I have to say no many, many more times than I say yes.
Wow.
And a lot of times I'm sure I lose out on money. There's one guy that I can think of offhand that wanted to do something with me that I said no, and he's having a lot of success now.
Hmm.
I could have been a part of it, but I had to say, is this going to be worth giving up more of my time or family time or whatever, and how much effort is it going to take on my part to make this successful? And a lot of times you got to say no.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a tough one too, especially when you're somebody who's a real go-getter and aggressively trying to do everything you can.
Right. Well, that is definitely something that people need to think about, is what is your time worth? You know, and I have a dollar rate that my hours are worth in my head. I mean, I'm not literally charging people for it, but
right.
I have a dollar figure that what my time is worth. And then you can very, once you figure what that is, what that dollar figure is, you can kind of put your time on it. How many hours a week is this going to take? You know, what is, am I realistically going to make more? Am I raising my hourly rate by doing this? Am I not, you know?
Yeah.
And then once a project gets going, you know, and it's costing X amount of time, you can also figure out, is this, you know, something I should continue doing?
Okay, great.
So,
well, I'll let you get back to your family here, Aaron. I like, man, I really appreciate this. I really can't say that enough.
Awesome, Scott. Dude, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. Like I said on the Radiance Radio, the reason why I'm doing that show and then I like talking about this stuff is because this is the stuff that I'm honestly passionate about, you know, and I have moved on from bodybuilding, and I'm passionate about success and helping people in business. And these are the things that I'm really into. So, I mean, I used to read from cover to cover every Flex and MD and Iron Man and all the magazines, Muscle Mag. I used to read every fucking page of every magazine, sometimes many times. And now I'm doing the same type of stuff with books related to business and podcasts related to business and success related stuff, because it's something that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that can be taught, which is the cool thing, is that I think that everybody listening has the ability to be a huge success. It's just a matter of making the decision to do it.
Yeah, that makes total sense, man. And I'm seeing that as I push in my own life too. It's amazing, isn't it? When we see what we're capable of. Do you still feel in shock at times?
Only when I really sit back and consider it. You know what I mean? When I sit back and think like where I was versus where I am. You know, as a bodybuilding fan, it's hard to imagine. I work with Kai Greene on a daily basis, you know, and that's like a weird thing where, you know, I was a big Kai Greene fan, you know.
Yeah.
I talked to Jay Cutler every day practically. He's my close friend. And that's like a weird thing if you sit back and think about it. But now, like I said, all that stuff, you know, where it's like surreal and weird seems relatively regular. And only when I talk about that and say it to you does it seem weird, because I'm really focused on the business stuff and not so much on the bodybuilders or bodybuilding in general.
Sure, that makes total sense.
So,
all right, Aaron, will you enjoy your weekend? For Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally. This is episode number 16.
Walk with me until the time, make the